You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince and I and a guest go through every single episode of HBO's The Sopranos and talk about it.
That's right. And I am the senior film and culture writer at Up Rocks, and Matt is works for Vin DeBona. He's on the Star Wars show. He's got,
you know,
a lot of
Good
credits.
Mythical Morning.
That's right. Yeah.
I do a bunch of stuff. News Broke on AJ Plus. I mean, I got credits for days, but it's not about my credits or your credits. It's about HBO's credits.
That's right.
I guess. Or it's about our guest credits.
We're sucking that prestige.
Yeah.
But our guest this week is Mr. Laramie Legal, longtime friend of the pod.
You may know Laramie from the wonderful podcast of Film Drug Fraudcast, from the Hulu documentary Whoop Dreams. He's a film critic, formerly of Film.com. Is that correct? Or did I make that up?
No, that's true. MTV bought us. And then we were ceased to be, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things, mergers and acquisitions. It's the way it goes. But we're
M&A, man.
We're happy to have you on because
they restructured his ass. That happens sometimes.
Hey, sometimes you get restructured, dude. Yeah. You know, it's a cold, cold world out there. You know who's the real mafia? MTV.
MTV, that's right.
Oh,
they're the real gangsters.
So this week, we're gathered here to discuss Episode 13, the season finale of season one of The Sopranos.
That's right. That's right. This is the very last episode of the season, which is, I don't know if you know this, the definition of a season finale. I'm someone who's really into television, so I know these things. Like, I know that the first episode of every show is called a pilot. And the last episode of a season is known as a season finale. And also the last episode of, like, ever is called a series finale.
Oh, yeah. Game, set, and match.
Yeah. So if you've come here looking for, like, in-depth insider information into the making and distribution of television shows, you've come to the right place.
That's correct.
Yeah. But before I think we get started in talking about this episode, I think we should do everyone the favor of playing the theme song to the podcast. Pod yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen pod. Pod. You got to burn the shine. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. That's a funny theme song.
So in this episode, we can read the episode. In the season one finale, Tony is stunned to discover that the attempt on his life may have been ordered by someone very close to him. Later, he must deal with the fact that everyone knows he is seeing a shrink. Christopher is sent to take care of Jimmy Altieri.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so in our first segment, we call this segment Corrections from Last Week.
Yeah, this is where, you know, the thing about Sopranos is there's a lot of fans out there who have pretty much, you know, seen the show 1,000 times over and they know every single little bit of minutia about it. And they like to tell us when we're wrong. And yeah. Usually the person who's doing it is just some clown who thinks they know this show better
some
than
Fanuc.
We do. Some facha bruta who's just like, oh, actually what happened was, and it's like, shut up. But this week.
Yeah, in our season one finale of Pod Yourself a Gun.
Yeah, this is our finale as well.
We actually got a correction from David Chase himself.
Yeah, Mr. David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos.
Yeah, this was passed along by Alan Sepinwall, who interviewed Chase many times for his book. We had him on episode one.
And apparently he must have told David Chase, hey, check out Pod Yourself a Gun, which I don't know why he would do that.
Yeah, like, it's a bad idea.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God. But apparently he did.
We're starstruck, but also terrified.
Mostly terrified. Yeah. Like, I want to feel good about it, but I know, like, there's no way he got through an episode without going like, it's not about titties!
Yeah.
It's art!
So the correction from David Chase... I did not change my last name. My grandmother did in the 20s. I've said this many times for attribution. I mean, look, we're not going to read every interview with David Chase before we do a podcast
or
about
any of
him.
Them.
Right, or any of them.
Do me a favor and tell those guys on the podcast. And as far as their thing about the O sound changing to a U because of some glottal business, the word for the in Neapolitan is ooh, like ill in regular Italian. For example, u fum means the smoke. Yeah, that's good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's actually, that's like ugats.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, God, just told right there.
Yeah, we got roasted.
That hurts.
I mean, got owned.
And Alan said that he actually sanitized some of the language in the original email before he sent that.
Yikes.
So
what does that mean?
Yeah, he said, tell those fucking Mama Lukes. No, I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But that's great.
Wait, but did you get any detail on what he meant by sanitize it? The question I have, and I think we need to get Alan back on, is was he mad?
I think he was a little mad, you know?
I mean, what could we have possibly...
What are you going to do, look?
Listen.
Sometimes you...
You guys are terrible at your job.
Well, our job isn't to make David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos, feel good. About his career, he's doing fine. He got all the
great.
Emmys. He's got
great.
The money. He's got one of the.
He created Chase Manhattan Bank, for God's sake.
He made the bank.
Fact. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very rich family.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, David, if you're listening, if for some reason you decided to listen to the rest of the podcast and you've gotten up
no
to this,
chance.
Well,
no
maybe
chance.
Laramie, maybe. All right.
No chance.
But if you did. Then come on the pod, talk about it.
So David Chase's last name, for the record, is Di Cesare or Di Cesare. And then in our next segment, it's the Wayback Machine.
It's time for the Wayback Machine. As you know, well, you don't, but as we know, this episode was released April 4th, 1999. What was happening during that time, Vince?
So some of the things that were happening in April 4th, 1999, the number one movie in the country was...
Analyze this.
That's incorrect.
Fuck!
It was The Matrix.
Oh, all right. Good movie. Mm. Hey, dude, take the red pill.
That's right.
Bunch of Zionists over there.
Speaking of Zion.
It was a big day in pop culture history. You know, season finale of The Sopranos and The Matrix on the same weekend. How often does that kind of thing happen?
I mean, you know, a lot going
only
on at
once.
The time.
Yes. Number two movie was 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, all right.
That's just a good movie. Heath Ledger.
Yeah,
Ledger, dude. R.I.P. And what's her name? Julia Stiles.
That's right.
R.I.P.
She was in a movie I saw recently. Oh, she was in Hustlers. That's
she was
right.
In Hustlers.
She's the writer in Hustlers.
Yeah.
But R.I.P. anyway to her.
Well, I meant rest in peace as in, like, get some sleep because you look tired.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's rude to Julia Stiles.
Julia Stiles, if you're listening, please come on the pod again.
So top song was Believe by Cher still.
Yeah.
The Dow hit 10,000 for the first time.
Oh.
Just this week.
Good.
In the same week as this episode. I don't know what that means still.
It means fucking
what's
nothing.
What's the Cher song?
What?
Believe.
What's the Cher song? How does that go?
Do you believe?
In life, after love, after love, after love.
That's a good song. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And actually, so to coincide with the finale, the New York Post did a whole profile of David Chase. And I thought I would read some of that.
Oh, that'll be a first
for
us.
Hear a little bit about Mr. David Chase.
Mr. Chase himself.
One of our most famous listeners.
Yeah.
Chase is a Jersey boy, growing up an only child in Clifton and North Caldwell, and going into Newark every Saturday with his mother. I'm also an only child, so we got that in common.
Yeah, and you're both Italian, greasy-ass motherfuckers.
How many Italian-only children are there? Probably not that many.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point, actually.
We tend to be quite procreative.
You guys like to be procreating.
For 20 years, Chase has been
fuck a lot.
Mm-hmm, has been a successful mid-level TV writer, but his grander creative ambitions have always been blocked. He had 7 or 8 pilot scripts rejected and wrote 11 or 12 full-length film scripts that never got made. Over lunch, Chase is asked, "Where do the Sopranos come from within your imagination?" The idea started about 10 years ago, he begins. "I wanted to do a show based on my mother, who was a very negative person."
Jesus.
After a while, I feel like that is such a boomer thing to really like hate your parents.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I get like having parental issues.
Oh,
but
totally.
Then when you write a show where your mother like literally tries to kill you, I'm like, all right, it's a bit much.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, listen.
Makes for good drama.
We all have parents who, you know, had their problems here and there. But, you know, and mostly it's with our generation, it's just resentment of our parents for utilizing all of the natural resources and hoarding all the money and then leaving us with a dead planet.
For growing up with a nice social safety net and then dismantling it.
Dismantling it because they wanted us to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, which they did not.
I wish I would have used my parents for something creative, though. I'd known that I just do, you know?
Yeah.
I can't even write jokes. I'm trying to write jokes about my dad because he wants me to, but all of the jokes I've written about him are that he's been red-pilled by the internet. And I'm like, I feel bad putting that out there. But he has been red-pilled.
See, there you go. Red-pilled by the internet. This is the first week that The Matrix came out.
Oh, dude, it all connects.
Synergy.
It all connects.
After a while, I refined the idea and decided to place her character into a mafia context. Mm-hmm. I had read that Nikki Scarfo's mother was a stone gangster, and that clicked. Chase grew up aware of local Jersey hoods, Richie the Boot Boyardo, Sam the Plumber DiCavalcante, and Anthony Little Pussy Russo, and was a fan of gangster films ever since he saw James Cagney at age 8 in a Newark theater.
Hold up a second. The Plumber?
The Boot?
The Plumber.
Uh-huh.
Like Mario?
Yeah.
Like Mario Luigi?
Yeah, that's where they got that.
That was his gangster name? Well, hey, I'm the plumber.
It seems better than little pussy.
Good point. Little pussy.
Poured Drano down some guy's throat or something.
You want little pussy better than big pussy?
I do. Yeah.
Little pussy is like, ooh, I have a little pussy.
Okay.
It is better.
Big pussy is like wop 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 wop. You know what I mean? He was like, hello. You don't want a big pussy.
Hold on.
Or even worse, you're being told you're a big ass pussy. Whereas like if you're a little pussy.
But if you're a big, I feel like being a little pussy, it's like, oh, look at this little pussy. It's somehow more defensive.
Yeah. Offensive?
No,
it's dismissive. It's more dismissive than being like, oh, this guy's a big pussy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's just a little pussy.
Yeah.
Vince.
Yes.
When you see that, you'd be like, look at this little pussy. Like that.
Oh, dude, come on.
And what's the big one like, Matt? Can you tell me
the big one's like, hello.
Okay. Just make it sure.
I've always said that Bruce Springsteen's pink Cadillac is actually about a...
Is it?
About how he enjoys a big vagina.
Oh, yeah. That is interesting.
His love's too big for a Honda.
Yeah.
And it's bigger than a Subaru.
That's right.
It's also his way of saying that he doesn't like the Japanese, right?
Sure, yeah. Because he doesn't like the Japanese.
Because they're the ones who make the Honda.
That's right.
So that's him being racist,
yep,
really.
A little bit. He added a female shrink to the ensemble cast in his imagination. At the time, he was in therapy with
a
woman.
Is that
shrink.
How they wrote that sentence?
Yep.
He added it to his imagination?
In his imagination.
No, in his imagination, he's like, he just made it up.
Yeah.
That's what...
Based on the fact that he was in therapy with a woman shrink at the time.
Oh, crazy, dude. Like, is that where your ideas come from? Like, the person who wrote this is like, is the type of interviewer who goes like, so how do you get ideas? Like, where do they come from? Like, do you just live your life and then you're like, oh, I got an idea. I'll have Taco Bell tonight. Or are your ideas bigger?
Yeah. The other original element Chase has added is the suburban wise guy, because they hadn't been done before, according to Chase.
That's very true. That's like the best part of the show.
Goodfellas did the mob grunts. The Godfather did the elite bosses. I wanted to do middle management, the ordinariness of daily mob life.
Yes.
James Gandolfini, who plays Tony Soprano in his first lead role, grew up in Park Ridge, New Jersey, and quote, knew guys who knew wise guys. Gandolfini is big, beefy, and balding, not exactly a leading man type. He has been in films like Civil Action and True Romance, but was largely unknown until The Sopranos started airing in January. I was born to play Tony, Gandolfini says in a rare interview. He's turned down an interview with the New York Times Style section and rejected an appearance to The Letterman Show because he thinks self-promotion is, quote, out of character for my character.
But he decided to get interviewed by The Post?
Apparently. I mean, that's a very New York thing. Hey, I listened to The Post.
Yeah, you know.
Read The Post.
I don't read any of those finooks in the Times. Me, I'm a postman.
He's straight method all the time.
Hey, Mr. Postman.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry, dude.
I felt like I knew Tony, says Gandolfini, who was a bartender and a seltzer delivery man until he started acting at age 26. One article had called him a former bouncer, but he says, I was too nice to be a real bouncer.
Aw.
It doesn't even seem like Gandolfini is acting as Tony, but he is, brilliantly, with his eyes, his breath, his shoulders.
That's true, man. Yeah, I mean, it's literally the greatest performance of a television character of all time.
I've said this before, but I think James Gandolfini is the greatest breathing actor.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Like Mandy Patinkin.
I would agree.
Mandy Patinkin is a great like eyelid actor. Him and Jeffrey Wright are probably our two greatest
good eyelid actors. Yeah.
You know, they do all their emoting while they're blinking.
Yeah, their blinks are insane.
Tony, he does it mostly with his breath.
Have you guys already done your favorite Gandolfini role? Like, we already stated that?
No, actually.
I have a controversial one.
Oh, what's that?
Hold on, I bet I can guess it. Okay.
I'm going to say you're going to say 8mm.
No. I'm going to say In the Loop. Do you see him in that?
I've not seen that.
You know what? I saw that a long time ago, and I don't remember it that well.
It's very solid. He's only in it about 15 minutes. He's great in True Romance, too.
In the Loop, that's the Iannucci, the guy who did Veep's first movie.
Okay. Interesting. Let me. I'm trying to think of, like, I know I saw him wearing glasses as an army man in a movie, but I don't remember.
Zero Dark Thirty, right?
Definitely in that. But it was like an earlier one.
I remember him very vividly.
It was like Remains of the Day or some shit.
And that's Anthony Hopkins.
Nah, but there was one that was like that.
But I really liked him in his minor role in True Romance. I do think that's like a standout Gandolfini. And I do think he was great in 8mm. Like, he was like a perfect sleazeball.
Wasn't he?
He's very good in The Mexican, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was. Yeah, you know, I kind of like that more than everybody gave
it
credit
for. I did,
too.
I thought it was a little underrated.
Yeah. So, general thoughts on this episode. I think, this episode,
yeah,
because it's the season finale, they really don't skimp on the resolution. Like, there's so many things come to a head in this episode.
They,
like,
let it all happen.
I feel like this came from a time when Prestige TV thought that they owed us more resolution.
Yeah, when Prestige TV didn't know whether or not they were going to, they didn't know whether or not they were going to continue.
Right.
And they
didn't know whether they were going to get another season, and they didn't know that people would keep watching.
Yeah. They're not about stringing you along.
No.
They're about giving you an ending. And almost in a way, we've kind of reverted back to that a little bit with kind of the mini series, the limited series that they have now, or like, you know, Ryan Murphy series, where he's like, I'm giving you one season of a show, and then I'm giving you the same show with a completely different story.
American Crime Story kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. American
Horror
Story.
That's a different type of confidence, is the confidence to have a show that has like a completely different cast right. and story from season to season.
Right, but at least it's giving you, it's knowing that you want some, a fully told story with some resolution and whatnot. And it's at least understanding that much, as opposed to shows that are just taking you along for a ride, mm-hmm. Of which you're really, you don't know whether or not it's ever going to resolve. You know?
There was like that writer's strike season of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just, boy, they like nothing happened in that season. And they were like, you'll still watch it, piggies.
Yeah, exactly. You want your slop and you will do anything.
But I thought,
kiss our feet and lap up the mucus.
This episode was pretty fantastic.
Oh, wonderful.
One of the best of the season, for sure.
I mean, just everything comes to a head. Let's just for Bada B stories, I've got Jimmy dies, Livia loses it, Tony loses it at Melfi. Melfi tells it like it is, and Father Intentola gets intentold.
Yeah, that's true. I would say if I have criticisms of this episode,
sure.
I would say it almost errs on the side of too much resolution.
Interesting.
When Carmella tells Father Intentola off, she really just sums up his entire character.
But I actually loved it. I loved the fact that they did that because of the fact that it's not really something that you see all that much in prestige TV today.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of just have you never have someone saying exactly what the character was written to do.
Yeah.
And
does fit Carmella because she
would do that.
She's the smart one. Like, she knows his game. She that's kind of her deal. It's like, hey, I know your game, fucker.
She didn't know his game until she saw him eat with the other lady.
Yeah, no, she was in denial. I mean, that's also a big part of Carmella's character, is being in denial about the nature of the people that she's really, that she likes or that she loves.
She's still got feelings.
She still wants to, like,
she's
you
got
know,
big feelings. As smart as she is, she's got big feelings that still...
she's in her feelings, dude. Yeah. Drake style. But, like, she definitely is someone who, you know, when she's, had enough, she will up and say it. And I love... do you have any audio from the scene where she does it?
Yeah, it's like I started to record the clip, and then I realized how long it goes on. So I'll just play like towards the end where she really starts summing up Father Intentola's entire life.
Do it.
You know what I think, Father? I think that you like the, I don't even know what to call it, the whiff of sexuality that never goes anyplace.
I have feelings for you, Carmella. I admitted it. It's my job to deal with them so I can carry on my pastoral duties.
How does Rosalie Aprile fit into your feelings for me?
Oh, so that's it.
I really appreciate everything that you've done for me, Father Phil, truly. The religious counseling, the book on Buddhism, the wonderful chats. I am very fond of you. More than fond. But I think you need to look at yourself. Call this an intervention. Because I think you have this MO where you manipulate spiritually thirsty women. And I think a lot of it is tied up with food somehow, as well as the sexual tension game.
I like that because she, like, this was before thirsty was used as a pejorative against, a sexually... thirsty woman.
So
I kind of think she's...
Or thirsty men, too.
Yeah, she gave us that, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things that she does is one of my absolute favorite, like, just cutting to the core of, like, men bullshit, is when he is acting flabbergasted at the way she's acting, and then she's like, oh, cut it with the who me crap.
Yeah.
I love that so much because that is something that, I mean, I've done it where it's like, what? What? I'm just totally acting normal and you're being irrational. And it's like, oh, fuck you. You know exactly what you fucking did.
Yeah.
This isn't heroin. the one thing that I have to.
Wait, is that, I'm not allowed to do heroin in your house?
What kind of shit is that?
That's a callback to
whole pasta was no good. I don't like that.
What?
Oh, when she
threw out the pasta. Delicious.
That was a little much for me, but it was also what a badass move.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things, like, if I were to make a full pasta and I'm going to give it to my lover and my lover is in the middle of, let's just say, fucking someone else, I would not throw out the pasta. I would not have the strength.
No, you would cry while you ate it.
I would cry while I ate it. And I like that she's just like, fuck you. Like, that's the biggest fuck you I've ever seen.
Can I digress slightly here as a foodie?
You absolutely can.
And as someone who grew up eating Italian food,
yeah,
a lot of the food in this episode looks pretty bad. I mean, they make it like Artie Bucco is this great cook, and almost every dish they show in this episode
is
just straight like penne with red sauce. Like, come on. Like a fucking, like a dry penne with red sauce. Like, that's the best you could do? Get the fuck out of it. Like, I wouldn't even make that, like, for my family to be like, oh, I made you a dinner. It'd be like, dude, come on. You got to do something better than that lazy ass penne with red sauce.
As someone who only knows how to make Italian food, that is a funny shaped pasta with red sauce or with any color sauce. I take umbrage with everything you just said.
But, I mean, if you're going to, first of all, if you got a restaurant, make your own pasta. Yeah. Like, penne, you almost for sure got it out of the box. Like, I doubt he homemade. It didn't look like he homemade.
It didn't look
penne.
Like homemade penne. But also, you have to remember that this show was shot in 1998.
Also, Carmela, she's got that whole big kitchen.
Yeah.
She's a homemaker. It's not like she's going to a job in the morning. Well, like, you can't make some homemade pasta for the priest? Come
on. Okay, listen. All I'm saying
Matt Lieb, you're saying Italian food didn't exist in 99?
No, I'm saying that the show wasn't taking in the sensitivities to the foodie snowflakes that exist now.
Yeah, like me. No, I do think that Italian food has evolved some since then.
Well, it's not that, but it's like showing food on television has evolved. Like, the food porn aspect of showing food on TV is something that you can't mess up. You need to have, if you're going to show food in a movie or on television, if it looks like garbage,
I mean,
people will notice.
They were already doing food porn in this season. Like,
they
were much better. There was much better food.
It's almost the beginning of food porn, if you think about it.
What
other shows before The Sopranos?
Well, The Godfather and Goodfellas both did food porn to some extent.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah, I guess it's like an Italian movie thing in general where they just show like how much like food matters culturally in the mafia.
And in this
mafia.
One, she's just showing up with a pot of lazy-ass penne with red sauce.
I mean, I thought it was baked ziti.
I'm a little offended that Vince took me out for penne now. that's starting to hurt, you know, in hindsight. Yeah.
I thought we were going to a fancy dinner at the Olive Garden.
Yeah, yeah. The hell, man.
Yeah,
what the fuck?
That being said, I have just brief criticisms, but there's so many things I love about this episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
I think, dude.
I think chief among them is Mikey Palmese getting whacked.
Oh, a great whacking.
Because first of all, I meant to say my other criticism of this episode.
Oh, go ahead.
Is they do the weird slow-mo during some of the action scenes, which feels a little dated.
You're talking about when they kill Jimmy Altieri at the beginning.
And there's slow-mo at the end when Tony's fighting with the orderlies in the hospital.
Yeah, there is some weird slow-mo for sure.
Unnecessary.
Dude,
yeah, I actually didn't understand the slow-mo.
Would you be if you're getting taken for Russian prostitutes and then you get shot in the head instead?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is definitely something that, number one, like, the blood's supposed to be in my boner, not all over the fucking,
that's
like,
the old switcheroo.
Imagine being like, no, that blood was for my dick!
Talk about expectations. Jeez.
Yeah.
Jimmy's reaction. Jimmy, I don't think, is one of the stronger actors in this series.
But his reaction to his own death or knowing his impending death was powerful.
Very good. Yeah.
Very powerful.
It was.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And he repeats it twice. And the second time sounded remarkably like the first time. Do you think that they used ADR where they were just like, that was such a good reaction, let's do it twice?
Yeah, I think so. Because they do love ADR in the show.
They love ADR.
And one place where they really love the ADR was when Meadow is making out with her boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I almost had to shut it off because it's so gross. I got a clip of that. It really sounds like two high schoolers making out.
Yeah,
it's really disgusting.
It's gratuitous.
Come on, stop. I want to watch. Oh, George O'Keefe.
Was that
it's just gross makeout sounds, but I did appreciate that she added a pretentious art comment in the middle of the makeout session. Mm,
George O'Keefe.
Yeah, we get it.
How
Meadow,
old was Meadow in this app?
She's 17.
Yeah, I think she's
17. She's a senior in high school because she's going to be going. She's checking out colleges and whatnot, so she's either 17 or 18.
So that I don't being want you said, to say anything appropriate about her, please.
No, of course not.
No, please don't.
So that being said. I think Mikey Palmese getting whacked is one of my favorite scenes.
It's one of the
it's kind of
I'm trying to think of like throughout the season all of the different whackings that happened, and it might be my favorite because it's the it was like they perfected the Sopranos whacking of like, you know, not like the serious ones that they do later, but like kind of like the of the side characters of like the, you know, the capos.
Polly getting poison ivy in the middle of a shooting.
Goddamn funny.
And it makes him madder and he shoots him.
Yeah, he shoots him because of that. Like
they also
they have him on the ground. What's that?
They miss a bunch. Like they try to shoot him a bunch. They hit him about maybe 30% of the time.
Yeah, I know.
And also, why are they driving behind him, they're lurking. Why don't they just shoot him then? Why does he have to run off and then they have to run?
Why don't they knock him over with the car and then shoot
something.
Him?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, listen, no one ever said they were smart.
Yeah. I also thought it was a little bit unbelievable because it's like Mikey's clearly like this fitness jogger guy. And then you get like out of shape ass Christopher and Polly got to chase him through the woods.
Yeah, I know. A junkie and someone covered in poison ivy managed to catch him.
Luckily, he fell in a creek.
Yeah, he falls in a creek and he's like telling him, no, I'm not the one who killed Brendan Fallone and whatnot. And then you imagine Chris is ready to kill him in that moment. But before he can, Polly is so mad about the fact that he's going to have to take an oatmeal bath that he just starts shooting him. And it's just the greatest. It's the greatest. It's a wonderful hit.
And I think part of what makes it is the fact that they set it up so well because I mean, Mikey as a character, like, he's almost too on the nose as a piece of shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, they make you want him to die for the entire season.
Yeah, they do. They do. He's on the
nose.
It's very on the nose in terms of, like, him being just a tremendous piece of shit.
Yeah.
And you want him to die. And even, like, the in the scene, you know, preceding his death, right before he goes on a jog, he tells his, his girlfriend, you know.
I got a clip of that.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And if Chucky calls, you get me on his cell phone. Ho! You hear me?
Yeah, okay. I think that I heard you already.
Go take a Midol.
Which is just... It's wonderful because it's exactly the type of, number one, does he call her a hoe? Or is he saying, oh?
That's a question in my mind. Like, I like to think that he was like, oh.
Yeah.
I feel like him saying ho is not really true to that guy's character.
Yeah, it's not true to character because he'd be like, you know, I don't say ho like some black shine or something racist.
I think he would have called her a cunt, if anything.
Yeah, he would have called her a cunt. He also wouldn't. He strikes me as a guy who would say things like, the problem with the culture today is there's too much rap music. Like, you know, so there's no way you would say ho. But also, go take a Midol, which is just like open mic level period joke. He's just like, hey, I bet your uterus hurts from your monthly visitor from Aunt Flo. Fuck you. Like, it's just like that kind of misogyny that you're like, I feel like he's about to die.
And then I have the clip of the actual whacking.
Oh, great.
Which is also just wonderful.
Oh, God. Oh, no, please. Please.
Fucking poison ivy all over.
My friend Brendan, you shot him in his bathtub naked. No chance to run. No, I swear to God, it wasn't me, it was Junior. You hated that kid, it was him. Yeah, right, it was Junior. Mr. Magoo.
Oh, come on. Please. Please, please.
I can feel it itching me already.
To me, that's so great because it's like, you know that Christopher really wants this like heavily cinematic retribution. Like he's the one who's seen like the most mafia movies.
Yeah.
And he really wants to give like the great speech before he kills Mikey Palmese.
No, and
he wants him to remember it, but he's too inarticulate.
No, right. And that's actually what I love about that hit is it kind of sets a precedent. Because before that, like for example, the Brendan Fallone hit, it's very much so old style mafia movie hit where you say something right before you whack the dude. Like he literally says, is like, hi, Jimmy, bye, Jimmy. And then he shoots him, and which is like, you know, it's like, it's kind of action movie bullshit. You know, it's kind of, it's old mafia trope, but like the idea of like just being covered in poison ivy and just being like, fuck this. And they're just like shooting him.
Well, the idea that they try to do an old mob movie trope and they can't pull it off.
Yeah. He's like literally like Chris is trying to do, my name is Indigo Montoya. You killed my tweaker friend. Prepare to die.
He's trying to do Ezekiel, 25,
27. Weren't they on that one, boat hit? Where do you get the fish?
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
It probably fell off a truck.
First question I had is, I'm not sure who that was. It was obviously someone from Junior's crew, but I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, it's probably a guy that we didn't, they didn't bother introducing that much. Because you know, he's one of Junior's guys.
But I do love that they were like, but this fish gag is so good. Like, what if they ended up cutting him from most of the season? And they're like, well, we got to keep the hit because him, you know, getting shot by a gun that was, you know, concealed inside of a giant Big Mouth Billy Bass is...
No, that was like a red snapper or something. That was a big fucking fish.
Listen,
a big red fish,
It was a big red fish. I don't know fish. I only know the singing one that says, take me to the river.
I do know fish. That was a big red snapper. You can't just find those, okay? I'm telling you.
Yeah, that is...
Maybe Pink Cadillac is actually about a big red snapper.
Hey, but check this out, though. The fact is that fish was a trick to pull the gun out. Does that make that a red herring?
Whoa,
dude! That's crazy. I got a lot of really deep insights, bro.
Do you eat the fish after?
That's a good question.
I mean, you wouldn't want to let that nice fish go to waste.
You spent all that money on the fucking, you know, fish.
No, you bring that over to Artie Bucco. You're like, hey, I caught this fish.
Yeah. Mea culpa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a fantastic hit. I think...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Let's get into some of these storylines that I think were great.
Yeah, so that was Tony's beef with Junior's crew coming to a head.
Yeah. And just in terms of, I mean, we talked about the Jimmy Altieri hit, which, by the way, to this day, you know, in this rewatching of The Sopranos, I'm still not entirely convinced that he is a snitch.
Yeah.
But you know who I am convinced is a snitch? Father Intentola.
Yeah.
And
different kind of snitch.
It's a different kind of snitch, but that is something that I kind of completely missed out on. You know, the later in the episode, this is after Artie Bucco goes to visit Livia in the nursing home or in the hospital, and
he brings her some penne.
He brings her some some shitty penne and ketchup.
Yeah.
And she tells him, like, oh, you know, do you forgive Tony for blowing up your restaurant, which is something that he did not consider. I don't know how he couldn't have considered that as a thing to have happened, but I guess it kind of makes sense.
As soon as he heard it, he knew the whole story.
He knew the whole story. He knew exactly why. And so then he goes he goes to confront him and kill Tony. With a sniper rifle that he's probably used for hunting once. And then after that, he has this, a meeting in the church with Father Intentola, who is just telling him to snitch. And it's kind of an interesting thing, because at this point in the episode, Father Intentola has been intentoled by Carmela that, you know, he's basically a fuckboy. Mm-hmm. And that, you know,
he likes to be close. Like, he doesn't like to do any of the dirty work, and he doesn't like to have sex, but he likes, he's got gossip and he's got food. Those are his things.
And that is like the, you know, Catholic priest version of a fuckboy that does not include pedophilia, obviously. Yeah,
he's a fuckfather.
And even so, he's urging Artie Bucco to snitch, which I thought was an interesting thing, because I'm not sure why he would do that, knowing full well that, like, the retribution that would be taken would not go against him, but go against Artie. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like
I think likes the drama, you know?
I think so, too. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's just drama. He just loves drama, which I get, dude.
He likes the drama, and he likes to be a scold a little bit.
He is. He's exactly that. Let's get into, if we're going to get into psychoanalysis, let's talk about...
He likes movies with Renee Zellweger.
He does. Which, oh, by the way, can we...
We can do it. It's the 90s.
It's time for It's the 90s, our segment where we talk about all the 90s shit that we noticed from the show. So, I think we already pointed out Mikey P telling his girl to go take a Midol. For some reason, I consider that kind of a 90s thing to say.
Yeah, I forgot that Midol existed.
Yeah, me too. But it was something that was like, oh yeah, you would say that if you were like a boy in middle school.
Even that product, it was kind of just like, you know what? Girls can't take aspirin. They need like a special type of aspirin for their period.
By the way, Midol is just naproxen. Like naproxen, there's Aleve is naproxen. Yeah. It's just like just a name brand for naproxen that they just branded as like, oh, this is for your period cramps. It's like you can take an ibuprofen. You can take.
No, it's pH balance for a woman.
It's strong enough for a man.
Yeah.
It's pH balance.
And sweet enough for a lady.
Here's something 90s from the episode I noticed.
Yeah.
Jogging.
Yeah. What?
Jogging.
Jogging. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess jogging.
No, I still jog.
People jog.
What? You lame asses.
Yeah, I guess people run now. Anyways,
yeah.
Another was when Pauly was talking about they're eventually going to do this hit on Tony and get it right. And he says he won't use boys to men this time.
Yep.
Which is...
That was his only reference for groups of black people.
Yeah. It was just boys to men. You know, he guess he wasn't like up to date on like, you know, Bone Thugs and Harmony was also around.
Maybe he was saying it's so hard to say goodbye because like they screwed up the hit like that. And then so it was hard. It was so hard to say goodbye.
I like that. I'm not a big Renee Zellweger fan. Just the idea that there were Renee Zellweger fans seems very nice.
So the movie they reference, it's sorry. One True Thing.
One True Thing, yes.
It's a 1998 American drama film directed by Carl Franklin. It starred Renee Zellweger and Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
William Hurt.
Mm.
And Tom Everett Scott, who is the drummer in That Thing You Do.
Oh, yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I like him too. It tells the story of a woman who is forced to put her life on hold in order to care for her mother who is dying of cancer.
Interesting.
Yeah, which does seem like the exact kind of like weepy chick flick that Father Phil would want to watch with a lady.
Yeah, because that's his thing. He likes to make women feel vulnerable, you know? He's a fuckboy, dude.
Yep.
And also when...
Because she doesn't like it. He's trying to do the thing where you just like, you get all your different Gumars the same present.
Yeah,
and
right.
She's like, hey, I don't even like, I'm an individual. I don't even like Renee
Zellweger. Why are you re-gifting the shit that you gave to some other, you know, poor schmuck that you've been trying to like not fuck?
Yeah, I don't want, what's her face, is Leavens.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
I don't want her sloppy seconds.
The sloppy seconds of DVDs. she's like, I don't even like Rocco's Modern Life. Why'd you get me the box set? It's like, oh, I'm sorry. This is for these kids. Sorry. And then Tony, when he's confronting Livia at the end of the episode, he calls one of the RNs George Clooney, which is an ER reference.
Yeah, who knew that George Clooney was going to have such a career after that?
Yeah, yeah.
He was the hot guy from the doctor show.
Yeah, he was the hot doctor, and then he was the shitty Batman, and then career really took off.
Yeah, and then he was a leatherhead.
And
then he was a monument man.
Yeah.
He was... an ocean. He was Danny Ocean.
That's what it is. I'm trying to think. I was like, what is the movie that made him a thing? I guess it was...
I would say the looking down on therapy is very 90s.
Yeah. I mean, just people being in therapy and thinking that's interesting is very 90s.
Right, yeah. Thinking therapy is interesting is definitely a very 90s.
I mean, I will say that it was for this show.
I mean, God bless David Chase that he thought like having mommy issues and going to therapy was interesting enough for a show.
Yeah.
Because if he pitched that to me, I'd be like, no, that sounds
stupid. Yeah, no, nowadays you'd be like, nope, sounds boring, don't want it. And but then it was the perfect time for it. And I mean, let's say it's clearly he perfected the genre of show about therapy. And not only that, surpassed it because it's mafia therapy.
Do you think this was better than In Therapy with Gabriel Byrne?
Yes.
Yeah, I never
by
watched that
far.
Show. Didn't that show like every night? Wasn't that like a five nights a week kind of thing for
was
a while
it?
There?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I know it was based on an Israeli show, I think, or... Am I thinking Argentinian?
Yeah, whenever you base a show on an Israeli show, you have to ask yourself, is this really interesting?
Good. Was that a baby?
No.
Did you step on your baby? All right.
Am I crazy?
No,
it's a weird sound.
I thought I heard a baby cry. So yeah.
But also, I haven't attacked my therapist physically since the 90s either.
Yeah, that's right. The last time that I attacked my therapist was the 90s. So yeah, which gets us into the attack. But before we get there, I want to say what preceded the attack on Dr. Melfi by Tony Soprano. And it is her being as openly, just she's just being open about what her theory is, about the fact that she's pretty sure his mother tried to kill him. And I thought that was...
It's a stretch that she would know that much.
It's a stretch that she would know that much or think that's even possible.
Right.
And like, I mean, I understand from like a psychoanalysis point of view of like being like an interesting theory. It's like kind of, but it's kind of like your therapist going, no, you really do want to fuck your mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, did you try to fuck your mom? And it's like, no, that's like a metaphor or some shit.
Right.
Like, it's not a thing. It's like,
I don't actually want to fuck my mom.
Yeah. So I thought it was strange. And they tried to like kind of justify it when she's like, listen, it seems like you're in trouble. We don't have all the time in the world. I'm just going to come out and say it. Like, something along those lines.
I mean, it was perfect.
No, cards on the table.
Yeah, cards on the table. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was very much a Sopranos arc. It's very much like the Mikey Palmese thing where, like, at first, like, when the plot point first comes up.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm kind of like, this is too on the nose. this is a bit of a stretch, but then they wrap it up in such a perfect way that I end up loving it that much more.
Yeah.
So like that scene was a setup for the end scene,
yeah,
where Tony's in the hospital and he picks up a pillow. He grabs the pillow off the gurney,
yeah,
and he's walking to his mom's room to presumably smother her with a pillow, which is wonderful.
We can only assume so. And it is.
And then he finds out she's having a stroke and he hands the pillow to the doctor lady.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't need this anymore.
Yeah. I was like, well, I guess nature is going to do the smothering for me. But it's one of those things where, you know, he's only convinced after he hears the FBI tapes of the conversation between Junior and Livia. But like, the fact is that this is like something that he's clearly not open to, or even real, like maybe subconsciously thinking about it, which Melfi points out. But like, it was insane to me that like Melfi got, I think she got too familiar. Like she got way too familiar,
yeah,
with him.
He had to check her.
He did.
And he did it in spectacular fashion.
And I love her reaction to it. To as soon as he leaves, to immediately lock the door and then put a chair in front of it.
Yeah.
Because like, and not only that, but later when he shows up in the office again to like run back into the office, because she is the most human character on the show in terms of her reaction to shit, which is that like. I was almost.
It's funny because she combines very human reactions with very very stagey therapy.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, just like the idea is of the fact that she has just been physically threatened, mm-hmm, by Tony, who says he's gonna, you know, basically punch her to death.
I mean, he's ruined her life at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and like. The you know, sees him in the waiting room, and the human reaction is, oh fuck, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna call the police. And it was something to me that I was like, oh yeah, like for some reason seeing him in the office, like part of me expected him to be like, look at her and she goes, oh well, look who's back, like that was the feeling, mm-hmm, that I got. But instead she's like, fuck
yeah.
She runs away.
I mean in real life, do you think she would? I feel like she would have immediately flipped on him and gone to the police like instantly after.
Yeah,
maybe so.
Yeah.
I mean, because he has basically told her, I love that scene where he's telling her that she needs to leave town. And then at the end, he's like, you've been a really good therapist to me. Oh, great. Thanks.
That scene.
I'm glad that you think I'm a good therapist now that you've gotten me mixed up in this thing where I'm about to get whacked.
And again, it's like Melfi, Lorraine Bracco doing some of carrying just the show in terms of like just how wonderful of an actress she is, because her reaction to him saying, you got to leave town, you know, you're in danger. She goes, get out of here. That's not fair.
Yeah.
Like, this is the most human reaction, because she's like, rationally, they should not whack me. He's like, yeah. Well, yeah, but we don't live in a rational world, do yeah. we? I'm a fucking gangster.
Yeah, I have a bunch of meathead buddies who get scared and they whack people.
Yeah, my associates will kill people for whatever reason they want.
I do have one question.
Sure.
Let's say you play out this thing where he grabs the pillow, goes into mama's room, and snuffs out her life, right?
Yeah.
Like, are nursing homes that poorly run that they're not going to notice?
I think so. Like,
I think he's just got to pay off the orderly, at least.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Do you...
It's like, hey, she was an old lady. What are you going to do?
Oh, there's all sorts of
when
scandals.
When you suffocated people, do they throw up or anything? Or like,
I mean, I think they shit themselves.
Yeah, when you do it.
Well, no, because I do it, you know, I cut off the blood and then they just go to sleep.
Yeah, they go to sleep.
Okay.
That's a lot less messy than the whole pillow thing.
Yeah.
That's but what I'm saying. Yeah,
I think we're talking about the difference between choking someone out to go to sleep, like a sleeper hold, and straight murder.
Right. I think if you hold a sleeper hold long enough, it eventually becomes murder.
Which is kind of crazy if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is definitely.
That's why they call it the big sleep.
They call it the big sleep. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. It was just like the reaction to like get the pillow, I thought was fucking great. But yeah, just I love Lorraine Bracco's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
What's up?
Nothing. Keep going.
You had this look like, fuck.
It's okay.
Okay.
I'll tell you later.
All right. Remember to cut that out.
Yeah.
So another thing that I love about this episode is, of course, we have Livia And everything coming to a head with Livia's storyline. So Livia is introduced right after that makeout scene with that guy who's Puerto Rican who we never see again.
Dominican, I believe.
Oh, Dominican. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
With the first of Meadow's assortment of interracial boyfriends.
Yeah, yeah. She's just someone who, like, the only Italian she's ever with in the show dies. Oh, wait, shit. It's a spoiler.
No one cares.
Yeah, that's a good point. No one cares. So all of the sudden... she hears her grandmother, Livia Soprano, just outside yelling for her sister, Satemia. And do you have any audio of
I
that?
I have some audio.
Okay,
that,
great.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you want, lady?
Go away. I will never speak another word to you again, Satemia.
Grandma, Aunt Satemia's dead. It's me, Meadow.
Such a brute.
Grandma, it's Meadow, remember? Come sit down.
Yes. Meadow. Oh, I can't stay in this house, honey bunch. Not while that faccia brute is in here.
Come on, Grandma, let's go see who it is.
It's the police. They're going to take you to Alzheimer's jail.
Which kind of a weird beat from the cops in general, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, do you live here? This is your house? Or what happens if it's not? You're going to haul her off to the who's cow? Like, she's a million.
I mean, in North Jersey, I feel like most of your calls are confused Alzheimer's people.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Could be.
So now the question is with that is that whole scene, and also this is a question for the whole season, is there's this thing where we're not sure what she's faking and what she's not faking. And just... I'm trying to rationalize her actually going that far with the act.
Right.
To like literally.
Yeah, that makes. Yeah.
To wander all the way from Green Grove.
She did just try to have her son whacked and it went badly. So.
True.
She's got a lot of stuff going
on. Listen, she's got a lot of stuff going on. But
you
gotta, like.
When you try to kill the boss, you better kill him.
Yeah, you best not miss. Yeah. If you aim at the king, you best not miss.
That's right. That's
the
what
wire.
I was going for. Yeah, thank you.
different show. Different David. I mean, just to me, it seems like, okay, you're right. You could rationalize it and say, like, yeah, sure. You know, she knows she's in trouble. She's got to keep this act going. But that is a lot of commitment to the act. I will say, though, to strengthen your point that she is doing it as an act, the performance there seemed fake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She seemed like she was faking it. Like, oh, Meadow, my granddaughter. You know, like it seemed like she was hamming it up a bit.
I think, and I like Livia because she's a bit of the magical cat in this episode because everything sort of comes to a head and we get a lot of resolution.
Yeah.
But she is the ambiguous thread that's still left untied in this episode in a lot of ways. In that scene... And then, of course, at the end, when Tony thinks she's smiling at him after he's telling her off.
Yeah.
And it's
ambiguous.
Yeah.
You don't know.
She could be terrified.
Yeah. I was trying to, this is like my fifth or sixth go through of this series, if not more. And every time I look at that and I go, yeah, it could be a smile, but it's like a Mona Lisa's smile where you're just like, you really don't know what you're seeing. Like
Mona Lisa, you're an overrated piece of shit.
Is that a song?
Yeah, it's from Popstar.
Oh.
It's probably the best song in Popstar.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the Bin Laden one is fantastic.
Yeah, you know what? We should just do a whole podcast just on Popstar.
Yeah.
But I have another question. Was the stroke real? It was, right?
I mean, that's...
How do you fake a stroke?
You can't, right? Okay.
I mean, you can. Sure, of course you can. You just mimic the symptoms.
But I think they have a test for that. Like, there's a specific enzyme, I think, that in your blood when you had a stroke, right?
Yeah,
I guess so.
I don't know, man.
We'll get a doctor on here next time.
Yeah, it's a question. It really is a question, like... Is she actually faking it? And I think it's a little bit of both. I think that, she definitely was ordering a hit, but, like, is that ordering a hit, like, based on her, like, is that her dementia where she feels comfortable enough doing that? Would she have done that if she was completely of sound mind? Is she completely of sound mind? I don't know. I think it's a little bit of both. All I know is that was
I think
the weirdest smile.
Sorry,
if you think that's a smile, then you've never seen a happy person before. Then again,
I
she
think
is the type
smile.
Of person. She is the type of person who was like when Tony was talking about do you have any happy memories from your childhood? And it was just like someone falling down the stairs.
Yeah, and his mom laughing.
And his mom laughing at that. And it's like, yeah, I guess she would be laughing at her son being like, "You tried to kill me." And, you know, like that's funny to her. She's crazy. Yeah.
A couple of things there. I think the smile, she was smiling. I do question whether it was medically, you know, induced or whatever. I think that's valid. Like, but then also for punching the orderly, he gets assault charges there, right? Like,
he could. I think he's going to pay off somebody at the hospital for that.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be my guess. I don't know.
They should have done a whole season just on the trial of him punching the orderly.
I think she's not a great mom. I'm going to say that.
You got that right. Yeah. If there's one thing that we on this podcast and our number one fan and most famous podcast listener, David Chase, can agree on, Livia, not a great mom. Bad at mothering.
I did want to get to my favorite line of the episode. Well, actually, there's two. My other favorite line is when he goes into Melfi's office after she's split town.
Yeah.
And he walks in and the janitor just goes, "She on vacation."
Yeah, she on vacation.
I don't know why that made me laugh. It made me laugh a lot, though.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And I like the music he was listening to. It was very, you know, they have a way of like having those characters throughout the series that just kind of like, Latinx people in general who are playing these like domestic characters or like janitors, where they just say one or two lines that are fucking hilarious and like deliver them perfectly. Like in this season, I think it's the one where someone throws out a newspaper and she's like, "You throw out the newspaper?" And she goes, "Oh no." And then he's like, I told you, do not ever throw out the newspaper. And then she goes, "Oh no." and then he's like, "Oh, forget it." And then he goes, "I make some enchiladas." Just like, I can't tell if it's racist or not.
You know, but what? Accents are funny.
Accents
I think
are
we
funny.
Can accept that.
But it's like, it is just the way they write those characters is so good.
Yeah.
So
my favorite line, this is when, you know, it's coming to a head at with Dr. Melfi.
Yeah.
And I think you probably know where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
"Uncle June and I, we had our problems with the business. But I never should have razzed him about eating pussy. This whole war could have been averted. Cunnilingus and psychiatry brought us to this."
"You had to see a shrink because of the mother you had."
"Cunnilingus and psychiatry brought us to this."
Absolutely. Yeah. The way that David Chase can sum up everything in his show with just a few lines is just brilliant. Like, sum up Father Intentola with just like a few lines, sum up the entire series with just a few lines.
Yeah,
it's so good.
We could close this out. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Laramie.
I think I like, if you think she's going to do homework, I got a bridge to sell you.
It was quick.
It happened quick. He didn't say anything. We all know she's not going to study.
And it's a great example of Carmilla not being fooled by people's bullshit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's like, "You know that Meadow is like having sex with this Dominican kid. We all know." But also, let's touch on the ending real quick.
Sure.
In the ending, it ends with them. Right. They're caught in a rainstorm.
Yeah.
And then they
storm's coming. Yeah.
A storm's coming. Which is for a lot of people who don't understand, art is a metaphor. See, in what happens in art sometimes is like things that happen in the world they're like a mirror image of what's happening in the story, and it's what's called a foreshadow. So the foreshadow is like a regular shadow, but it's like before.
But it's like the assault charges for season two from the orderly.
Yeah, that's right. It foreshadows the coming storm of litigation that he's going to have to go through. And just the headache of an assault charge.
Yeah.
So he gets to the new Vesuvio, and they, of course, are like, you know, also like there's a power outage and they're also out of power. And then, you know, like, "Oh, well, let's just go to Mickey D's." And then he goes, no, just come in. We'll figure something out," which is a very Olive Garden end to it.
Yeah.
He's like, "When you're here, your family."
Yeah, when you're here, you eat some shitty penne with red sauce and probably too much dry oregano in it.
Yeah, and then we all talk about therapy.
Has anyone made the, of course, Vesuvius blew up joke? I mean, is that?
Yeah.
It's Vesuvio.
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah, and I also want to say that just the conversation, the coming out conversation that Tony has with his crew, where he's like, I want to tell you all that I'm in therapy. That conversation is one of my fucking favorite conversations in the show.
And
because it's
like, yeah, I've been to therapy too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Paulie's like, I've been to therapy. I was going through some things. Enough said.
And, yeah.
And then Silvio is like, it would be better if we could all just talk about our feelings in this crazy world or something like that. And he's like, but we all know that's not going to fucking happen. It was just beautiful. And of course, Chris asks if it's marriage counseling, and he's like, yeah, I guess so. And then he just walks away in anger, which is confusing to me. I mean, it's not confusing. It makes total sense for Chris, because Chris is someone who absolutely needs therapy, but he thinks it's beneath him, and he absolutely thinks it's beneath all of his fucking heroes. So, yeah, I think that's part of the reason that he shoots Mikey
Palmisa. Another 1999 reference is giving Tony some fucking Cabernet when he comes in there.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's very 90s.
How about some Chianti or some Montepulciano?
I know, dude. Yeah.
Give me a Sangiovese over here.
There you go.
So, yeah, what do you think? Now it's time for Gabo?
Oh, well, I just wanted to say one more thing like about the ending in the new Vesuvio.
Yeah.
Like, on one hand, when Tony's, they're having that conversation, and on the one hand, it's very much the cheesy, like, well, at its core, it's really about family.
It's about
family. Which is, you know, like the ultimate producer cliche when they're talking about their show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's about the mafia, but it's really about family.
Yeah.
It's
about Fast and Furious cars, but it's really about family.
It's about, you know, government agents trying to stop the next 9/11, but at its core, it's really about family. So, like, on one hand, it's very cheesy, but then like the subtext of him like telling his family like, oh, these are the moments that you really got to remember, and like if you actually think about it for more than a second, you're like, wait, you mean the moment where you're like driving in your car to go like kill someone in your family because they tried to whack you, and then you ended up stopping at a restaurant to the restaurant of the friend whose restaurant that you burned down, and he serves you some shitty penne, those are the moments that you're gonna remember.
Those are the moments that you'll carry with you for the rest of your life.
And the thing is, it's kind of true.
It was totally true.
That is the part that you probably remember.
Yeah, it was a nice moment.
It's just he's completely, you know, decontextualizing it from what a normal person would look at a Kodak moment to be, you know?
Cooking by candlelight. Forget about it.
I think it's time for Gabo Vafangul, which of which I found two interesting Italian-American or Italian slang. Now, the first one was faccia brutta, which is what Livia is saying. By the way, Livia, when she's looking for Satemia, she's outside and she yells, "Keiki, tell my sister to open the door." And I just love that she has a cousin named Keiki.
Keiki.
and Keiki is actually mentioned, now you sound like a fucking nerd, but in the FBI tape, she said, you know, my cousin Keiki, her husband, you know, had depression. He was a shell of a man. Better he should have died. And I was like, oh, Keiki. I remember Keiki from you yelling about Keiki. So, she calls her sister Satemia a faccia brutta, which is an Italian word. And quite literally, it means having a brutal face. It's a very being a very ugly person. But and also, you know, I think there's some more swears you could say. What's a swear you would use for?
I think it's probably like a C word.
Yeah, yeah. It's a C.
Yeah.
You're a C
word. Very, very little pussy.
Yeah. All right. and of course we have our friend Stevie B to define it and use it in a sentence for us.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Stevie B. The Italian American slang word of the day is facce brut. Facce brut. I got a guy I work with in the shop. We call him good-looking Chalutz. He's handsome. Very. Ladies always knocking on his door. Always. One day, Chalutz notices some crow's feet around his eyes. He goes in for the Botox. Now, he's facce brut. American. Got a guy I work with in the office. We call him good-looking Charlie. He's handsome. Very. All the ladies are always knocking on his door. Always. One day, Charlie notices some wrinkles around his eyes and goes in and gets Botox. Now, we call him not so good looking Charlie. Facce brutte.
You know, I gotta say, Stevie B has been a goddamn blessing
to this show.
And we have another Gabba Vafongul, when someone describes someone else as a strunz, which is a piece of shit. And guess what? Stevie B, once again, coming through.
Strunz. Down the block, Donnie, always got a thing. He's one of those. He's a schemer. Always got a deal, always on the hustle. In fact, Donnie's got nothing. He's a real strunz. Minigun. Down the block, Donald always has a pitch. Always a money-making proposition. Donald thinks himself quite the entrepreneur. In truth, Donald is just a jerk. Strunz! And remember, sharing is caring.
Oh, I fucking love Stevie B. We got to get him on the pod.
Yeah, well, there's actually another Gabba Vafongul. It's actually the name of Tony's boat, which is the Stugatz.
Have we not done Stugatz this whole time?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Wow.
Stugatz is a transliteration to English spelling of the Neapolitan pronunciation of the Italian vulgar slang expression sto cazzo, literally meaning my cock. Yeah. So yeah, Tony's boat's called My Cock.
Oh, I thought we had a Stevie B.
Oh no, we don't have a Stevie
B. Yeah,
that
makes sense. You know, that's the thing about Stevie B is like he'll do some of the slang, but like you try to get him to do any of the more like the racial slurs or talking about dicks. Yeah, that's like is Stugatz and Ugatz?
Mm-hmm.
They're the same thing?
More or less, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my cock can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, because
Stugatz is like, hey, fuck you, man.
Yeah, because Ugatz,
you're kind of like a dipshit. Like you're Stugatz, you're a dick.
Right, but Ugatz means dick.
Yeah, as like I got nothing. Dick.
I got dick. Yeah. I got Ugatz. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta say, you know, the Italians, they do pretty good with the slang.
I mean, it goes back to the Romans. They got the graffiti mm-hmm. of the penises everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of dicks, man. They got mm-hmm. a lot of dick-centric stuff. And, you know, a shout-out to David Chase for learning us a bit about the ooh in the Ugatz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And for making a good show.
And for making a great show, of which the first season, I got to say, fantastic.
Yeah, solid B+.
Solid B+. I mean, and I'm just so excited to get into the next season because we got just so much more to go. So many more characters. Ugh. So many more plot lines.
Maron!
So many plot lines! And, you know, so much more Italian-American slang coming up. You know, of course, the next season will be not set in the 90s because it came out in the year 2000.
Yeah.
But I still think it's the 90s will apply to it.
Yeah, anything before 9/11.
Anything before 9/11 is the 90s. Yep. That's a good point. Uh-huh. That's a very good point.
That's the day the 90s ended. That's was on 9/11.
The day the 90s died. Oh, God. Yeah. Fantastic season. And I got to say, an even better season of a podcast. Pod Yourself a Gun, season one. It's all over. And we'll see you in season two.
Yeah.
Laramie Legal. Thank you so much for being a guest on our season finale of Pod Yourself a Gun. How do you feel?
Thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Much like a tiny, 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 tiny woman's female place, I feel good and happy and full. Uh-huh. Full of life for you guys.
Cool.
So.
Thank you so much.
I just just glad we're all still here, man, on this earth, kicking it.
Kicking it on life. This earth, just crushing it at life.
Oh, and congratulations, Vincent, on your upcoming. And congratulations,
you.
Matt, on probably going to be the victim of hate crimes pretty soon. So that's cool, too.
Yeah, you definitely. Know? I got...
We've all got reason to celebrate.
We all have reason. Life is short. We got reasons to celebrate it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
people,
moments like
if you
these
want
we'll
Matt
remember.
Lieb, you mm-hmm. got to come through me. No That's, one's taking out Matt Lieb.
Goddamn right.
Me.
Yeah, because you're one of our $100 broadcast donors, which means that I have to go to Seattle. But first, I think I have to go to Kansas City. Oh, God.
Oh,
right.
No. Oh,
yeah, no. I really got to start planning those. Anyways, frogcast at gmail.com. If you want to email us with any questions or corrections or anything at all about the Sopranos podcast, Pod Yourself a Gun, please email frogcast at gmail.com and we will address your concerns. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Thank you so much for listening to the first season of Pod Yourself a Gun. We'll see you in season two. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.